Hi everyone, I'm Jenna Milley with Screenwriting U, and I'm here today with Tom Rogers, who wrote Tinkerbell and The Legend of the Never Beast. Hey Tom, how are you doing?
I'm good, Jenna. Nice to meet you.
So nice meeting you too. I really thought the movie was so cute, and I'm so excited to talk to you about it. How did you get this gig? Is this your first in the Tinkerbell series?
Actually, no. I've been with Tinkerbell on a couple of the previous episodes, and then I was with the studio Disney too for quite a while before that. So I was sort of a known quantity.
Sure. It's just a great world, these movies, and it's really interesting. How did that come about? That this was, you know, a direction that they wanted to go in, and how did you get to this version? Because Tinkerbell's not really the main character in this film, which I thought was so interesting about it.
Right. Well, I'll back up a little bit. The whole world of Pixie Hollow was created back in around 2007-08. I was very much involved with the first iteration. I didn't have any credited involvement, but was involved with kind of creating the world and figuring out who this core group of fairy characters would be, and figuring out the rules of the world, which are always really important when you're working on a fantasy story. They have to have some kind of, they have to make sense internally, and then you have to kind of stick with them.
Create the
boundaries of that world. Go ahead.
Just curious, what are some of the rules that are hard to come up with? Is it the rules like where they live and what creatures are a threat? Is it those kinds of rules, or how their magic works?
All those kinds of things. How the magic works, how the pixie dust works. The first Tinkerbell movie I did credited work on was Secret of the Wings, which was a couple of years ago. It was directed by Peggy Holmes and Bob Scanaway. And in that one, Tinkerbell discovers that she has a sister she never knew about. They were created from the same laugh. But her sister lives in a part of Pixie Hollow Pixie Hollow is divided up into seasons, and her sister lives in winter. So there was, you know, for example, in that one, we had to create all sorts of rules about how do fairies come and go between winter and the warmer seasons. And there were rules about, you know, how your wings could be damaged if you were a warm fairy trying to fly into winter, and that created obstacles that kept Tinkerbell and her sister apart, and that they had to work, you know, it actually then created societal obstacles. It was basically keeping people apart who really loved one another and ought to be together. So it was a way we were able to create rules that supported the emotional story we were trying to tell, and when things work hand-in-hand like that, it's great. So with the Fawn story, with Legend of the Never Beast, we really had to think about the rules of what is a threat in Pixie Hollow, and then how did fairies respond to that threat? And how do you have, you know, sort of, on the one hand, danger and a response to danger, which is what's represented by Nixon and Scout Fairy, but also kindness and generosity and open-heartedness, which is represented by Fawn. And then what happens when those two equally important impulses come into conflict with each other? So figuring out those rules helps you figure out the emotional story you're trying to tell and what's really kind of at the heart of the story, which is trying to figure out, is this creature a threat or a friend?
I think it's fascinating because I went to see it with a bunch of kids, and they knew so much about the world. So creating those rules are really exciting for them to kind of keep track of, I felt like.
Right.
And then the fact that you had a different character here, I also noticed that this film in particular had a lot more action and seemed more fantastical than the others. Is that a direction that you wanted to take when you got the assignment, or when they said, hey, we need your help on this? Is that something that you have to figure out on your own, or is it like part of the assignment? Just curious how a professional screenwriter takes, you know, take on the work of developing this story.
That's great. To give you a little background, I was brought up, Steve Loader is the director, and this, the concept of this creature who is, you know, sort of misunderstood beast was his from the beginning. And I'm sure you've probably seen interviews with him where he talks about kind of the genesis of the story, which was watching his, he grew up afraid of dogs, and now he's got kids, and he's got a daughter who is just the most, she's teeny and cute and just has this gigantic heart, and she's fearless. And it strikes fear in him every time he sees her run up and throw her arms around a gigantic dog. And yet he sees that, like, what makes him terrified is what's wonderful about her, is that she's just this, you know, big open-hearted little creature. And that was kind of the inspiration for the story. And so I came on, they hired Steve in, I think, January of 2012, and I, is that right, 2012, yeah. And I came on just a few weeks later. He wanted to meet with writers. Steve was an experienced television director, but had never worked in long form before. And I had a lot of experience working in long form. And we met and hit it off immediately, and I loved what he wanted to do with it. And so from the get-go, one of our first conversations was about tone. And that was something he really wanted to do, was to make this movie, you know, it's the sixth movie in the Tinkerbell series, and at that point, you really feel a strong need to tell a different kind of story, to break out and to really justify, like, why do we tell another story? If it's just going to feel like all the others, then it's not really worth doing. And so one of the ways he wanted to really push the envelope and differentiate the story was by using more action, by having a harder edge, by dealing with some really tough emotions, by being, you know, by allowing kind of danger to feel real in this world rather than maybe a little, you know, playing it a little too safe. So right from the get-go, he set that tone, and I was delighted by it, and we just, you know, we clicked on all of that, and we were off to the races. So you were asking a little bit about the development process. Do you want me to jump in and tell you some of that?
Well, I'm just... You know, what we want to know for new writers is, how does this work? You get the assignment, then what? You know, how much information do they give you? Do they just say, hey, you're going to write number six in the Tinkerbell series, come back with the script, or we need an outline, or how collaborative is it? Are you meeting with the other writers? Just sort of walk me through the process so that someone out there who wants to write, you know, a movie like this can know what it entails.
Sure. Well, for about the first, I'd say, 3 months, it was mostly just me and Steve, the director, in a room together, figuring out the story, working it out just like any writer does, normally alone, but it was the two of us together. And we're just basically outlining on index cards and putting cards up on the wall and trying to figure out, you know, what are the big moments we want, what are the things we're building towards, we're figuring out, you know, I was able to help a lot in terms of structure, and so really help us aim towards, you know, what's our big moment in Act 1 to get the story started? What's the big turn where Fawn makes a decision that she can't go back from? That would be your end of Act 1. You know, what's the fun stuff at the beginning and middle of Act 2 where she's meeting this scary creature and getting to know him and starting to think there's more to him than meets the eye? And then kind of our midpoint, where do things turn, and we see that the threat from outside, from this other force, you know, represented by the Scout Fairies, starts to put her into a difficult position. Where do we want to go at the end of Act 2? You know, how dark do we want to be when you know, you hit that kind of lowest of low moments for her at the end of Act 2? And then how are we going to get out of this thing? And so once we kind of had a loose structure like that, then we could start to fill in the gaps, figure out, you know, not just the story beats and tracking the relationship between Fawn and the Neverbeasts, but also figuring out things like, what does he look like? What is he shaped like? Does he talk? Is he sentient? How does he respond and communicate? All those things, you know, we started to try to figure out from the get-go. And then as we get, and I'll tell you more about the story development, but as we get farther down the line, and we start to staff up the production, then you get other people involved, like character designers and storyboard artists, and they begin to contribute new ideas about, you know, how he's shaped, how he looks. And we met with biologists and zoologists who gave us information about anatomy and physiology and how they would, you know, certain kinds of animals are meat eaters and what their teeth look like, and animals which chew cud and what that looks like. And that starts to shape, you know, literally the shape of the character. And so there's kind of a back and forth as you start to figure out what he looks like and how he moves. That affects, you know, how he interacts with her. And, you know, and all that then has to go into the script, and it has to be written almost like a conversation, but with one character who can't speak. So there's a, you know, there's a really fun process of figuring out how their relationship develops. But anyway, we spent about 3 months in the room working out that outline, pitching it to a core group of creatives at DisneyToon. There's a group of about 10 writers and directors, and we would get, you know, constant feedback from them. And it wasn't always great, but it, you know, forces you to find your weak spot and hone your story. And then we would pitch that to John Lasseter, who is, as you know, the head of Pixar and the creative director of Disney Animation. And John, then he gets involved. He starts to give you feedback, and he sends us off a certain direction. And out of that pitch, then I developed an outline. And so that's a much more detailed, beat-by-beat outline of our story. And then from that, you know, again, we go through a whole round of kind of feedback and notes. And from that, I wrote a first draft. And then that first draft led to a table read, which is actually a pretty produced production with actors in a theater with visuals projected behind them.
Wow.
Preliminary drawings and so forth. Yeah, it's kind of an involved production, but it's a way to kind of for the first time hear and see the movie in real time with real acting. I mean, we even hire an actor just to do the narration, and I even wrote a special draft that was more of kind of, that would have narration that was more like storytelling, and so somebody's not just reading.
Wow.
Exterior forest day. You actually want to write it like, you know, write their narration so it's more in a storytelling vein. And that is out of that table read, which happened about a year after I first came onto the project. It's out of that table read that then sort of production really gets launched. That table read got us our green light. It also got us a gazillion notes, which is part of the process. And so then you begin kind of the process of creating the movie in earnest. That's when storyboard artists come on, and they begin to storyboard all the sequences. And as the whole movie gets storyboarded, all the storyboards get edited into an animatic or a story reel. And that's all of the still storyboards edited together. So it's kind of like very, very loose, rough animation. And again, you bring all the actors in, you record all the parts, they edit the whole thing together with temp music, a score, and you can now watch your movie in storyboard format in real time. And now you really are getting your first look at what the movie looks like. And over the course of production, we had, I believe it was 6 of those story reel screenings.
Oh, wow.
So each of those is an opportunity to see where your movie's working and see where it's not working, and go back and you know, really focus your attention on those areas that need help. At the same time, you're also trying to identify sequences that are really working, polish those up, and get them into production so that they can actually go into animation. So it's kind of a funneling down process. Where at your first screening, you're going to have the most gigantic number of notes and revisions, and then each successive step of the way, you should be getting tighter and tighter and tighter.
What's the most difficult part of that whole process? Like, what do you feel like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I can if I can do this? You know, like basically writer's block, or just the moment where you're like, ah, Do you ever get confused, or is it pretty clear with this? This process sounds really writer friendly. I mean, they allot you a lot of time to figure it out, the story. But
it is writer friendly. I think, you know, if you're asking when does that moment of kick in, that's every day at 9 a.m.
That's so funny.
It's one of the nice things about being collaborative, and it's one of the different things about, you know, before I worked in animation, I wrote in live action. And for the most part, you're very much on your own when you're writing a draft. You know, you meet with the executives, you get your notes, and you're set off, and you go away for 12 weeks. And you kind of don't have a lot of interaction. What I love about animation is it's collaborative on a daily and hourly basis. So there are not too many times where you get one of those, like, I'm completely frozen, I don't know what to do moments, because you just can go into somebody's office and go, hey, I need to brainstorm with you. And just kind of having those opportunities shakes your brain loose. And, you know, usually after kicking around some ideas for a little while, something will kick into gear. So I know, right, you know, but to be a successful animation writer, you have to get out of that mindset of I've got to fix everything myself, and you have to really embrace the teamwork aspect of it, because that's really what animation is strong at. And, you know, being able to not feel, you have to set ego aside a little bit and not always want to be the hero with the solution, and be more like, I'm, you know, one of many people pulling on the oars on this ship trying to get it to move. And so being a little bit egoless and more collaborative is something that will then bring you success. And it's a kind of a, what's the opposite of a vicious circle? A happy something. yeah. You know, where it builds on itself. And, you know, sort of putting your ego aside and embracing that then actually, like, helps you find better solutions, and you become a better writer, and that just makes you look better anyway, which is good for your ego. So, ironically, it's self-reaffirming.
Well, that's great, and I think that's why these movies are always so good. I mean, I knew, you know, you just have confidence you're going to have this really solid story when you go see one of the Disney Pixar movies. So it's
thank
out.
You.
Thank you for walking me through that process. I feel like I just unlocked the mystery of how this works. If only we could do that in our own homes when we're writing by ourselves. But thank you so much. It was so great talking to you. I'd love to talk to you for your next project as well. What are you working on next?
You know what? I'm actually working over in TV animation right now at Disney. There is a super popular kids show called Sophia the First.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know Sophia?
I do.
So we are doing a spinoff now of Sophia that's called Elena of Avalon.
Oh, great.
This was just announced in late January. It will introduce Disney's first Latina princess. So we're all pretty excited about that. It's a big, you know, sort of underserved audience. And, you know, the feedback we're getting is that, I mean, all girls are really excited to see a new princess, but our Latina girls are really pleased to see somebody who is going to reflect their, you know, sort of their culture and their identity, and that's kind of exciting to be a part of.
Very cool. Well, I will look forward to that, and maybe we can talk about that too when you get closer to releasing.
Terrific. I would love to.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Okay. All right, good. Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you, guys.